Shalom everyone, and today we're going to study about Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the biblical calendar, and especially Yom Kippur of 5784. Everybody who has a mind and sees, reads, listens to what's going around, knows that the coming year is going to be very, very unusual. The instability around the world, in politics, economy, culture, anything you just, that you're talking about, anything you talk about, anything you think about human individual well-being, society, family, bigger than that, countries, continents, the whole world is in a very, very uncomfortable place. A very worrying place, very unstable place, and Yom Kippur this year is going to be very important because this is the day that the human destiny is being created. By the end of that day, it's going to be mostly written down and sealed for the coming year. So the question is, how can we be involved in that process of creating our destiny for the coming year? This is the topic of this day. This is the topic of today's class and lesson and study. And sooner or later, within a few days, we are going to celebrate Yom Kippur. This is not just a celebration. Yom Kippur is a day of which, as the sages are teaching us, on Rosh Hashanah, the first day of the biblical new year, on that day, the whole world, every human being is being judged. Who's to life? Who's to death? Who's by fire? Who's by sword? Who's by, and the whole list. If you know the song, if you know the song of Leonard Cohen, that's based on that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur prayer. The judgment is happening on Rosh Hashanah. However, this judgment continues for 10 days, and by the end of Yom Kippur, it is being sealed for every human soul. So, this year, we really have to be on alert to realize that we have a great opportunity to be involved in the creation of our destiny for the coming year. And because this year, we really need some source of protection, some source of safety, certainty that will take us for the rest of the year, and it is really the day that will determine if how much of the year we are going to be slaves to all the craziness around. And there's a random craziness, and there is a perpetual craziness that goes on for a while already, and there is also deliberate craziness, because that's the way to control people, to get them crazy, to get them upset. They don't think. They have too much noise. They can't see what's really going, and they're very easy to be controlled. And history has showed us that there are very, very strong negative forces around us. These forces did not stop messing up for the last century and on, and we are still facing many, many challenges in this great journey of humanity towards a world that is much more just, united, in harmony, in peace. But it's a very crucial year, the coming year, and it's part of a very crucial decade. Of this decade, the number 780, this is which means the number 780. We are in 5784. So the whole decade is very, very important because during this decade, things are supposed to change in a very drastic way towards more justice, more openness, more responsibility, and more connection to the most important thing, the purpose of our existence. When you live in a society that is so materialistic, it is very hard to let go of the religion of materialism and to really connect to a spiritual awareness that is basically much more safe. It's really safe, much more than being, living in a materialistic religion that everything is measured by physical aspects, while the metaphysical universe, the spiritual dimension, is so not important in our culture. Who are the people that really we adore as a society? Usually it's young people who somehow they sing well, or they tell good jokes, or they look good, and all kinds of stuff like this. This is such an era of idol worshiping, and whoever is connected to that's going to be very painful to let go of that and to connect to admiring people really of virtue, people that are really connected to real spiritual values and concepts. Humanity is making its way away from these concepts, and the price is so severe. And somehow we have to start to make our way back home. And that's the name of the game, especially during these days and on Yom Kippur. And let's see how. So, first of all, Yom Kippur is known in the Hebrew calendar, as we said before, as the most holiest day. And there are good reasons for that. It's the most holiest day. However, most people don't really get that day properly, because what does it mean, a very holy day? On one hand, for a lot of people, if this day determines our future, determines our destiny to life or death, poverty or richness, health or sickness, all of this stuff, this is very important. Therefore, people are really scared, and that's all that fear is a result of many years of brainwashing during the Dark Ages, of which, the God that people worship is the God of horror, terror, scare, and fear. Okay? This God does not exist at all. And the Dark Ages were over about 500 years ago, but still there's certain concept that people still carry with them, and a lot of people don't realize that the Dark Ages are over, and therefore their association with God or with anything of religion, especially the biblical religion, is in context with the horrors of the Dark Ages. We are going to learn today the true meaning of Yom Kippur and the connection of it. And let us start with a few questions there, because we want to know what is Yom Kippur about. So the first question is, why is Yom Kippur so holy? By the way, if we go to the Talmud, at the end of Tractate Ta'anit, it is said very clearly, just in the last paragraph of chapter of Tractate Ta'anit in the Talmud, it is said very clearly, there were 2 days were the most happiest days of the year, Yom Kippur and the 15th of Av, the holy day of love. So here the Talmud is telling us very clearly that Yom Kippur is the happiest day of the year. Okay? How did we get into a day that people really get themselves to cry? Because they think the more they cry, the more miserable they feel, the more mercy God will have for them. And usually it doesn't work. This method does not work, and I'll explain why. So the second question, why Yom Kippur was on 10th day of Tishrei? Most of the greatest Jewish holidays, it's either on a full moon or a new moon. So we had Rosh Hashanah on a new moon. We're going to have Sukkot on a new moon. Tu Bishvat is a new moon. The 15th of Av is a new moon. Is a full moon, I'm sorry. Passover is full moon. Why Yom Kippur is on the 10th day? Okay, because there is a connection to Rosh Hashanah, of course. And that's the question, how is that connected? And why is the Torah using the name Yom Kippurim in plural, although the name is Yom Kippur, but the Torah is using mostly the form of Yom Kippurim. Kippurim is plural of Kippur. Why plural? What kind of plural is there? You know, Kippur means the Day of Atonement. Why? What's the difference saying the Day of Atonements? Okay, why to add the additional part that shows about plurality? Okay, so let's go to the basics of Yom Kippurim. We read from the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, verse 27. Okay, אך בעשור לחודש השביעי הזה, יום הכיפורים הוא מקרא קודש יהיה לכם, ועיניתם את נפשותיכם ויקרבתם משל אדוני. Also on the 10th day of this 7th month, there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be a holy convocation unto you, and you shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. Okay, that's the King James Bible version. But you realize over here that when it was translated, it says the Day of Atonement, although the original says the Day of Atonements in plural. Okay, so in our mind it is single. Why the addition of the plural? That's for again, one thing. The other thing is, why the 10th day of the 7th month? How come you celebrate the new year on the 7th month? This is weird. So, you have to understand, we have two new years, major new years, in the Hebrew calendar. It's like two cycles. One, that sees Aries, Nisan, the day of the month of the Exodus, as the new year. That's a new astrological or biblical year, because the Exodus happened on that month. Also, this is the new year from the point of view of the light, which means the sharing of light. We have to remember Passover was given to us as a gift from the Creator. What did you do to get it? Amazing, unheard of, impossible miracle that a whole nation of slaves was delivered from the strongest empire of those days. Okay? It was all a miracle that came from above. So Passover is about something, a gift that is coming from above. And what we did, we had just to slaughter a lamb. Okay? And eat it with bitter herbs and unleavened bread. So the proof to that it is the new year from the light point of view, it's a gift. It's, we are just passive in that new year, is when we are calling that month in the Torah. If you want the source, you go to Exodus chapter 12, just in the beginning of the chapter. And you'll see over there, this is the month of spring. The month of spring in Hebrew, Chodesh HaAviv. The word Aviv starts with Aleph Bet. Aleph Bet, you know, the first two letters of the Hebrew alphabet. You know, in many languages, when you want to talk about the letters, the phonetical letters, most of them coming somehow from the Hebrew alphabet. Especially because alphabet is the name for many, in many languages, for their alphabet, but it has a meaning only in Hebrew. Aleph and Bet are Hebrew words, okay? So you say in Greek, Alpha and Beta, And you say that also in Russian, you say it also in English, and many other languages, because somehow most of the phonetical letter system all over the world somehow originate from the Hebrew alphabet. Now, Aleph Bet means from beginning, and that means Kabbalistically, usually from above to below. So the Hebrew alphabet from above to below is Aleph Bet order. Now, if we come to the seventh month, seventh is always the vessel Malchut in the Kabbalistic terminology, the vessel, our part, the creation, not the creator. The creator is Aleph Bet, but the creation is a different, it's from below to above. And that's why when you look at the name of the seventh month is Tishrei. Tishrei is Tafshin Resh. Tafshin Resh are the last letters of the Hebrew alphabet from the last upwards. Taf is the last one, Shin is second to the last, Resh third from the last, Tafshin Resh. To show us that on the seventh month, this is the month that we, yes, the Creator is giving us a great gift on this month, but it depends on our actions, mostly on our actions, mostly on the way we awaken towards the receiving of the giving of the atonement from above. The atonement is not happening automatically. It is determined in our action, and that's why it's the seventh month. That's why it's Tishrei. For us, this is the new year, because that's where we step up to the plate in order to basically celebrate the new year with the Creator, which means He's giving us a chance, but the results will depend on our actions, attitude, state of mind. So here we have, let's go into analyzing again that verse. The 10th day of the seventh month, so we understand why the seventh month. The 7 months symbolize the creation, and which means we, the creatures, we determine our future. We simply join the Creator in the process of creating the new year. And there shall be a day of atonement, which means the atonement is very important to determine what kind of a life we're going to write together for the coming year. But it's also, if you look in the English at atonement, it's also there's atonement. You can divide it into atonement. There's something about unity and union, we're going to see that will explain why using the word Kippurim. It shall be a holy convocation unto you, and you shall afflict your soul. And here the thing about afflicting the soul, and from that translation, people come to the idea they should suffer. They should be feeling horrible in Yom Kippur, because only then maybe the Creator will have some mercy for us. It doesn't work because that's a mistranslation. I'm not, it's very easy also for Hebrew speakers to think ve'initem, that's, it's more than that. In modern Hebrew, it's not affliction, it's torture. You should torture your souls if you read that in a simplistic way. But that's not what it means, and we're going to learn about it. So let's continue seeing what Yom Kippur is about. Okay, just as an introduction, we're going to read from Derech Hashem, one of the most important books of Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzato, the amazing Kabbalist that most of his creativity was in Italy in the 18th century. He printing most of special books in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, and then he came to Israel the last days of his life, and he passed away in Israel. In a very young age, after creating an amazing creation about Kabbalah and how do we access the idea of Kabbalah. So in his very important book, Derech Hashem, The Way of God, he writes this way about Yom Kippur. Omnam inyan Yom Kippurim hu, shene hechin ha'adon baruch hu le'Yisrael yom echad shebo tiyeh ha'tshuva kala litkabel. So what's the major matter of Yom Kippurim? What's the major issue of Yom Kippurim? That the master of the universe prepared for the nation of Israel one day of which the atonement, Teshuvah, and Teshuvah we learned, whoever learned about the Rosh Hashanah in our classes, we learned that Teshuvah really means in Hebrew not repentance, not atonement. Teshuvah simply means to return, or if you want to explain it in the spiritual dimension, to reconnect. Reconnect to the tree of life. Okay? And he will explain us why. What does it mean? Why reconnecting? It's much easier on that day to reconnect to the Creator, to the tree of life, to the spiritual dimension on Yom Kippur than any day along the year. Ve'avonot kovim limachot, and it's easier than any other day of the year to eliminate, erase all the sins of our lives. Dehainu, which means letaken kol hakilkulim shenasu al yadayhem, which means to correct all the mess, all the mishaps that were done by people. Ulehasir kol hachosher, and to remove all the darkness shenitgaber al yadayhem, and he speaks of, and to remove all the darkness that people gave power to by their own hands, and now that darkness is controlling them. Now is the time to remove that darkness that we created. It's our own creation. Ulehashiva shavim al madrigat hakdusha, and reconnect the people who are connecting to the realm of holiness and closeness to the Creator. Blessed be He. Ulehashiva shavim al madrigat hakdusha v'kurva elav itbarach. Shenitchaku mimenu al dei chatotehem. And why people went away from the Creator, disconnected, because of their sins. V'hine b'yom hazeh, me'ir or shebekocho nishlam kol ha'inyan hazeh. And on this day, on Yom Kippur, there's a special, unique light that shines only on that day. And the power of that light is to complete that matter. What matter? We just explained. To remove the darkness, to erase the sins, and to reconnect to the holiness. Ve'omnam hu or shelekabel oto tzach shishmu Yisrael ma shenitzavu layom hazeh. So, if you're an Israelite, you need, in order to receive that light, you have to follow certain rules. Ovifrat inyan ha'inoy, and especially the issue of what the Torah says, the affliction. Although, we'll see later, it's not really meaning affliction or torture. But if you really understand it, when we do that, we're going to explain in detail what does it mean. The purpose of that is not to torture. It's not to experience pain. It's not to feel miserable or a victim. But the purpose is she'aleha mitnatkim min hagufaniyut nituk gadol. Because that aspect, the inui, disconnects us from materialism, from the body control, and that allows us to rise to a higher place. ומתעלים במקצת על בחינת המלאכים. And with that inui, wrongly translated as affliction, we can elevate really close to the level of the angels. ושאר כל פרטי הדברים כפי פרטי הדיקות. Okay, and we'll explain later what does it mean and what, in detail. But first of all, we understand that there's a great, amazing light that is available, shining on that day. That light can remove us, remove all the darkness, since whatever negativities and darkness that we aroused and that disconnects us from holiness and closeness to God, and if we really keep it properly, we can reach on that day very close to the angels, and that means again reconnection to the network of light of the creation. Now, how do we do that? Just to add another aspect, in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 36, verse 25, it says, וזרקתי עליכם מים טהורים וטהרתם, מכל תומותיכם ומכל גילוליכם אטהרתכם. Translation, then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness and from all your idols will I cleanse you. And this verse we repeat many times during the prayers of Yom Kippurim, which means that's a very important concept of the work of of Yom Kippurim. First of all, let us explain the background. The background is called the Nesira or Dormita. Okay. As the new year enters on the first day of Tishrei, beginning of Rosh Hashanah, there is a cosmic process that starts on that day, and it's called Nesira. We have to remember that Rosh Hashanah is the day of the creation of Adam. And what does he say about the creation of Adam? In the beginning, he was created, read chapter 1, towards the end of the chapter, Adam was created in the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. Why him and them? So, the Midrash is teaching us, Adam was created as androgynous, which means he had one female side and one male side. And Adam was basically all the souls of humanity, but in one body. On the second chapter, we hear that Adam was alone, but he was two, yet two in one. So what God did, if you read chapter 2, and all what's written in the first chapters in the Torah, these are just like symbols. There's nothing really explaining what happened over there. It doesn't say that Adam was all souls of humanity, okay? It doesn't say clearly, because people think there was only Adam, and Eve was created only on the second day. No, Adam and Eve, it says very clearly, that says very clearly, in the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. So Adam was a male and female in one, back to back. Now, in order to have Adam and Eve being able to relate to each other, they needed to be separated. So it says, and God put tardema, sleep, on Adam. That's the Hebrew word, tardema. This word in Aramaic is dormita. Okay, dormita. And then in Latin, it's a very similar word, dormir, dormant. The same, it's very, it means sleep. Okay, originally it's a Hebrew word, tardema. That's original biblical word. Now, when you sleep, there's a process that separates the soul from the body. The spiritual dimension from the physical dimension. Why? Because during the day, the two aspects of our individual existence, the body and the soul, they usually they're not very much in good relationship, and it's a daily fight and struggle. By the end of the day, we are very tired, and we are tired especially from the struggle within. So when we go to sleep, we first of all we're resting from that struggle. The soul is supposed to leave the body, and that's the sleep, dormir, tardema. And now in the spiritual realm, there's a kind of tardema, but that God is somehow separating, which means it's an operation. And the operation is starting on the first day of the Hebrew month of Tishrei, from the first day of Rosh Hashanah, and that continues till Yom Kippur. It's about 10 days, 110 days, 10 stages, 10 sefirot, 10 days of teshuva, of returning. And during these 10 days, God is cutting the judgment from Zeh Anpin, the spiritual dimension of a human soul, and loading them upon Malchut, so it's going to be much easier for us to cleanse ourselves and get rid of all the negativities we accumulated along the years. So this is happening right now, in those days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and we just have to cooperate with it. And therefore, it's easier during these days to do teshuva, which is atonement, reconnection, elevate ourselves, leave the curses behind, leave letting go the darkness, the pain, the misery, the traumas, letting go and allowing something higher, more holy, more spiritual to come in to replace the dirt that was accumulated who knows how long. So let us explain a little bit the system of human beings connecting to the spiritual realm. First of all, we have to understand the world we perceive with our five senses, with the logic of the five senses, it's not the only realm of existence. It's only a very, very, very limited aspect of the real universe we are part of. So if we're looking on the system, we look in front of you, see the four major levels. Chokhmah is the top one, Bina is below it, Zeh Anpin and Malchut. We live in a world that is basically Olam Asiyah or Malchut, which means the bottom of the scale of the frequencies of reality. We can perceive, understand, talk about, feel only issues that belong to Malchut, unless we start to train our spirituality, and that will open for us the awareness to the other dimensions above us. Now, Sfirat Malchut, the dimensions we live in, is just the lowest of them all and the farthest of them all from the other dimensions. If we want to understand the relationships among those levels, so the Kabbalistic explanation, there are many of them, but one of the simplest is Chokhmah. You have to remember that whoever studied about Israeli agriculture probably studied once in a while about the traditional agriculture. So first of all, the biblical agriculture, first of all, most of the Israelites, Jews, whatever, lived in the area which is today Judea and Samaria and the Galilee, which is a very hilly country, and you have rainy days only between Sukkot and Passover. Okay? Only between Sukkot and Passover, which means during the months of from May till September, there's almost no rain. It's very dry season. So how do you, and since during the biblical time, most of the population lived off the field of the agriculture. So that was very, very important. How do you sustain life in such a way when it's not raining? So the rains were coming during the winter days, and in this country, the rain is the same amount of rain like in London, but it's all very much concentrated, usually no more than 30 rainy days between during this year, this time, this as we said, between October to April. So how do you have rain? So how do you have water? So first of all, there are the system of springs, and the system of springs works this way. Every village, every town, including Jerusalem, was living off or next to a spring. Now, the spring is divided into four. So the life system is made of four levels. There is the source of the spring, but those springs, you cannot compare them to springs in other countries. They are very, very minor springs, and they flow very slowly. So you have the source, then you need to have a pool that collects the water of the spring. From the pool, there's a system of pipes or aqueducts into the fields of the village and the households. So that's how you sustained a community. Now, because that was the daily vision of life, that's why you see in the Zohar the imitation to the spiritual system of life, which means when we're talking about Chokhmah, Sfirat Chokhmah, this dimension is basically the source of energy, life force, wisdom, everything. Okay? This is the source. Now, from the level that is called Chokhmah, from that dimension that is called Chokhmah, the life force flows down to a lower level called Bina, which is like the pool, which means it's a reservoir that has the great collection of water, life force. Zeranpin is the next level, and it's basically a collection of pipes that funnel the life force into the field. Now, how many fields are there? Okay, depends how many fields the spring can sustain. Okay, and then later on in the history of those hilly mountains in Israel, there was a very like deep technology that was developed, and people usually dug into the mountain in the source to extend it into a long tunnel into the rock so that collects the water better and the flow will be stronger, so you get more water in from the source to the pool. So you see many water systems like this all over the center ridge, the mountain ridge of Israel, from the Galilee all the way down to Hebron, even south of Hebron. Okay, so how does that connect to us? We, a personal life, we are the customer, the end user. We live in the field. We live in Sfirat Malchut. We are the ones who are thirsty to receive the bliss coming from the upper dimensions. So, again, to realize that it's coming, Chokhmah is the concentrated life force energy that sustains every living thing. Then from Chokhmah, it flows down into Bina, which is where we connect to in order to get our sustenance. which means everything that means life. And the pipes, this is Zeanpin. Zeanpin, this is the realm in which is divided into many, many pipes, filters, through which when we are creating our spiritual work, we connect to the pipes of Zeanpin, and then we can bring in, suck in what all that life force that nurture every aspect of our lives. Now, when this system is functional, we, according to the Kabbalistic teachings, according to the Zohar, the Lurianic Kabbalah, whatever, it's all about this. When a person experiences life full of bliss, good fortune, and everything like this, it means that all four levels, Chokhmah, Bina, Zeanpin, and Malchut, are aligned together, and there's a flow all the time, and therefore you experience bliss, which means sustenance, health, good life, you know, a life that feels that things are going my way and it's fortunate. Okay? Now, when a person is generating all kinds of darkness, negativity, and what we call lives a sinful life, which means being addicted to all kinds of selfish ideas, what happened is that Malchut disconnects from Zeranpin. What does that mean? When the field is disconnected from the pipe system, then the field will start to wilt because there's no supply of water. Same thing when a person is into a state of generating negativity, either hatred, anger, blame, shame, selfishness, robbery, theft, dishonesty, all of those aspects that, you know, from the biblical, you read the whole, you know, 24 volumes of the Tanakh, and you realize these are the values that you are supposed to be, to stay away from, because these values disconnect between Zeranpin and Malchut, between the pipes and the field. It means that the pipes are getting blocked and the field is not getting its sustenance. And what is the result? Life that is full of darkness and misfortune. Okay? And when we say Teshuvah, it means really to return the hay. Which hay? The hay, the last hay of the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, the Tetragrammaton, which is the field. What happened? Malchut was re-disconnected. Teshuvah means Malchut is reconnected. Malchut means our reality, our existence. Okay. So, Rabbi Ezek Luria is teaching us, the great Kabbalist of the 16th century, why Yom Kippurim is in plural, because it is combining two frequencies of existence, Bina and Malchut. How do you see that? In the numbers. In the word Kippurim, you find three couples of letters that each one of them shows about another aspect. Okay? So you see over here Kaf and you see Vav, the first letter. And this third letter, it's Kaf Vav. Kaf Vav is the number 26. And Kaf Vav is the Tetragrammaton Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is Zeranpin. As we explained before, this is the pipe system. Okay, let's go back. Kaf Vav, this is the pipe system, Zeranpin. Okay, now we have the second and the fourth letters, Pei Reish. They are the number, it's a number, 280. 280, it's a number that symbolizes judgments. Par means also an ox, which is in Kabbalistic language, it's judgment. Okay? So 280 is judgment. This is Malchut. Malchut is the judgment. Okay? Remember, back. Malchut, as we said here, that's the fourth level, our level. which is in judgment that we created, we generated. And we have Yud Mem, the last two letters. Yud Mem is 50. It's a number 50. And that is Bina, 50 gates of Bina. Okay, so that's Bina. In Kabbalistic language, the number 50 is Bina. So what happens on Yom Kippur? That all three levels, the Anpin, Malchut, and Bina, okay, remember, we have the Pool, Bina, Zeampin, and Malchut. They are at one ment. Now you understand. They are joining together. What does it mean? That there's something magical that happens that day. It happens partially on Shabbat, every seventh day, but not as it happens on Yom Kippurim. Malchut goes up, joins to Zeranpin, and then immersed itself in Bepul, in Bina. Okay? So Malchut is right now, it's like soaked in Bina on Yom Kippur, which means the earth, the field, my life, that was thirsty, dried up, became so hard, so judgmental, so dried up, so no flow, no good fortune, Malchut is rising up. It's like you had a flower pot, and you're growing something over there, and you forgot to, you couldn't water it for a long time, and now the soil is very, very hardened. If you just pour some water on it, the water will flow on the sides, and the soil will stay rigid and dry. So what do? You immerse it in, and you soak it in a bowl of water. Okay? This is till the earth, the soil soften up and soaks in the liquids. This is what's happening on Yom Kippur. We are all rising up, ascending to the source of life, to Bina. And it's like the Creator soaks us in the pool. So it does a few things. One, we suck it in. We soak by immersion till all the dried up parts of our personality starts to get softer, not hard, rigid, and dry. They get softer and they soak in the bliss. The second thing, it's the holiness that we are reconnected to by soaking in the pool of bliss, that that's what Bina is about. I hope that this example helps to understand the real concept of how powerful Yom Kippur is. So, Rabbi Ezra is saying just the name Kippurim shows us about these three forces, three dimensions that are coming to become one on Yom Kippurim. So it's all about unity. It's all about one atonement. And there's another thing that comes up with that. And this is from Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 3. Where it says, Lo al halechem levado yichya adam, ki al kol motza pi Hashem yichya adam. It's a very famous saying. Man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out from the mouth of the Lord, that men live. Okay, I don't know, I didn't hear English speakers speak too much about it, but in Hebrew, it's a very common slogan. Whenever you want to say that we cannot be only materialistic, we need something of for the soul, something for the spirit, something that is more than just physicality, we use this verse. Lo al alechem levado yichya adam. A human being cannot live only just the bread. And the bread is a symbol of all physical sustenance. You need something of a higher existence. But here it says the mouth of the Lord. What does that mean? So Rabbi Zuchluria is giving us a very important wisdom that you can find in Pri Etz Chaim, the one of the many writings of Rabbi Zuchluria. And it says as follows: בכל ימות השנה, על ידי אכילתו ושתייתו הגופנית, שאנו מברכים כמה ברכות כמו המוציא וברכת המזון ויכול יוצא בהם, הנה על ידיהן אנו ממשיכים שפר ומזון עם האלה אל מלכות רחל נוקבה דזרת בין. So, all along the year, when we eat and drink physically, food, water, beverages, wine, it's not just a physical action. When we make the blessings, and you know, there are blessings in Jewish tradition, there are blessings, special blessing for every sort of food. If you eat bread, it's hamotzi lechem min haaretz. If it's wine, habore pri hagefen, and so on and so forth. It's a whole topic by itself. But the blessings that we bless, when we make a blessing on the food, we're not just eating the physical dimension, we awaken bliss from Bina, from the pool. We create a flow of spiritual sustenance, spiritual bliss flowing from Bina every time we eat physical food and we make a blessing, and that awakens the flow, and some flow of bliss trickles from Bina to Zeranpin, to our food, to our souls, when we eat. If we don't make the blessings, then we eat only the physical dimension. Okay, just the shells. Okay, and now he says the word achila, eating in Hebrew, is the number, you know, every Hebrew letter is a number. So achila, eating, the gematria, the number, so you join, Aleph is 1, Kaf is 20, Yud is 10, Lamed is 30, He is 5, together you get 65. 66 over here, okay? And this is Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. The name, one of the names of God is symbolized Malchut, and when you put it together, you get, at 1, you get 66. Okay, it doesn't matter, but what it matters is that the Malchut is physicality, and eating is physicality, unless you make a blessing with the intention, with the kavanah, with the meditation, that by the blessing you awaken light flow of bliss coming from Bina. Okay, so when it's a physical bless, physical eating, and we make the blessing, we can bring in light and sustenance from the external aspect of Bina, the pool, the source of life. Ach b'yom ha-kippurim, although, however, I'm sorry, however, on Yom Kippurim, anu nutnim la'achila v'shtiyah u'sherei dvarim misod ha-pnimiyut de-bina. But on Yom Kippurim, we're not connecting to the external part of Bina, we connect it to the internal part of Bina. How do we do that? By five voices. What are the five voices? On Yom Kippur, there are five prayers. Okay? Remember, on a weekday, there are three daily prayers in the Hebrew prayer book. There is a morning prayer, afternoon prayer, evening prayer. Okay? There are three daily prayers. On a holiday and Shabbat, we have four prayers. We have the morning prayer, we have the Musaf, which is an extra prayer that is done after the morning prayer, in the holidays and Shabbatot. And that, so together, it's, you have Shachar, the morning prayer, Musaf, after the morning prayer, and then you have afternoon prayer and evening prayer, so it's four prayers. Only one time a year, you have five prayers. That's on Yom Kippur. Why? Ki az olahi ad bina mamash, because Malchut, remember the field, is going up all the way to soak in Bina. Lachen anu mitanin b'Yom Kippurin. Therefore, he's saying, therefore on Yom Kippur, we afflict our souls. That's the word mitanin, but it means really that we are shutting down five ways of connecting to the physical dimension of joy to the body. Why? We do not eat and drink. We do not do all four, we'll talk about later on. Everything that is connected to the body experience, we basically shut it down. So it's like affliction of the body. Now that the body is, and the word is not affliction, the word is ani, is poverty. We basically are shutting down the noise from the body aspect by not eating or not drinking, not washing. Everything that is connected to the body connection, we shut that down. Why? Because, as we said before, when we want to connect to Bina, we eat, drink, we do other things with our body, we use a blessing so that physical aspect, physical action, can draw sustenance, bliss from Bina. But in Yom Kippur, we don't need the body to be an intermediate. We can connect directly to the internal aspect of Bina because we're feeding directly from the pool for the rest of the year, not just for that day. And that's the secret of Yom Kippur. Why we don't eat and drink? Because we drink directly from Bina. Why we do not have sex? Because the pleasure of sex is external. We can receive the origin without the wrappings. Without the disturbance of the body, we can receive that energy directly from Bina. Okay? Why we don't put ointments and perfumes? Because we receive originally directly from Bina. Leather shoes also. It's all because we don't have to connect to any kind of physical pleasure that is under five different aspects. Because we connect, we don't need an intermediate. We connect directly to the source, to the pool. Okay, so what are the five afflictions? It's not eating and not drinking, no leather shoes, no sexual relations, no ointments, and no washing. Only if you went to the bathroom and your hands got dirty. Now, you need to wash, but you wash only the fingers. You don't wash the whole hand, okay? You need to, unless the hands got really dirty, then you have to wash them, because you cannot pray with dirty hands. But just washing for pleasure, no way. So what does it mean, affliction? Does that mean suffering? We already explained that it's not. So the word is like this. What is inui, the original word? Ve'initem et nafshotechem. So it doesn't say you should afflict your souls. The Hebrew language is very rich, and there are five different words to describe the soul. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. And these are not synonyms. Each name shows about a different level of the soul. Nefesh is the lowest of them all. This is the part of the soul that is interacting directly with the body. Okay? So, when we talk about the body experiences, feelings, and so on, we talk about nefesh. So, when it says ve'initem, it comes with the word ani. Ani, ainun yud, poor, poverty. Which means we shut down, as I said, we make the body poor. On that day, we're taking a day off. Which means, you know how the body is like a little kid, I'm hungry. Do I want sour, sweet, salty? I don't know. Let's see what is there in the fridge. On Yom Kippur, you have a day off. Whatever the body is starting to, noise making, shut up. It's like, I have no time for you. Okay? That's Inui. We are basically making our body poor. We're not feeding any of the needs of the body because we are feeding right now the soul. We are feeding the real spiritual dimension of our existence. So why is that important? If you want to soar, ascend to Bina, you have to release the connection to the physical world. What's the connection to the physical world? That you need physical body in order to connect to any kind of fulfillment. No physical body on this day. You're not supposed to be really suffering. You should be in a comfortable place. Should be air conditioned. You should have a comfortable chair. You should wear comfortable and whatever. But it's about don't bring that to me. All the stuff the body is bringing all day long, every day along the year. On this day, I am having a day off. Now we can really focus on spirituality for the whole day. So what do we do instead? Those five aspects of connecting the body to any kind of feeling of fulfillment. We have five prayers. Well, the Arizal explains all five prayers are really meals because we use the voice, the sound of our words of the prayers to feed directly from Bina. So the first one is on the eve of Yom Kippur. That's the prayer of Arvit, the evening prayer. The second is the morning prayer in the day after of Yom, in the day of Yom Kippur, Shacharit. That's corresponding to Ze'anpin. Corresponding to Bina, this is Musaf. That's a prayer after Shacharit. After that, we have Mincha, the afternoon prayer, which is corresponding to to Chochmah. And then the last prayer, which is an additional prayer, Ne'ilah. This is the prayer, the last prayer of the day. It's called Ne'ilah, locking, because our destinies are being locked up, depends on what we've done during Yom Kippur. And then at the end of Tfilat Ne'ilah, there's a shofar blowing. In that moment of the shofar blowing, we are locking our connection to the tree of life for the whole year. Why it's called Ne'ilah? So, our great teacher, Rabbi Nissim Peretz, used to say, it's like we asking God, God, please, we rose, we went up, we flew up, we came, we ascended, and we simply flew up to that place of true freedom, Bina. True freedom because all in the pool, all the light and the bliss is like angels. We became like angels. We're free like angels. Lock us in this position for the rest of the year. That's Tfilat Ne'ilah. And that's the blowing of the shofar. And the blowing of the shofar is the blowing for freedom. If you read the Torah, the shofar of the end of Yom Kippur is the blowing for the connection to Bina. That's also the symbol of Jubilee. What is Jubilee? It's from the Hebrew word Yovel, the 50th year. What did we say 50 is? 50 gates of Bina. Freedom. Total freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom from death. Freedom from the angel of death. Freedom from all the limitations of the physical dimension. That's being real free. So, the whole journey of Yom Kippur is to reach as high as possible and to lock ourselves to that connection to the tree of life. And the more we can lock ourselves into that dimension, the more free we are going to be along the year. Free from the fears of, you know, sickness, what other people will do, what other people think about us, lack of sustenance, lack of all of those fears. You know what kind of emotions we are subjugated to, we are addicted to during the year, that rob us from our freedom. Yom Kippur is the day of freedom, so we can leave behind us as much as possible of the physical world. So the more free we become on Yom Kippur, that kind of freedom we're going to experience. It doesn't mean we don't have to go to work. Yeah, but this is going to work and this is going to work. Some people go to work because they love what they do and they do what they love. For them, that's a way to manifest their potential. Okay? That's freedom for them. And some people go to work because they have to and they suffer every minute. Okay? And they complain and upset and they blame, and that's torture. That's torture. Free people do what they love and they love what they do, and they connect to positive energy all most of the day. Okay, we humans, we have all kinds of blemishes, but at least next year will be more free than we've been last year, will be less subjugated to the slavery of all what especially our materialistic society is about. Just to add up to what I said in the beginning, we experience such a hard times because we were brainwashed in the last decades so much into a life that since we are babies, we are being brainwashed to be addicted to brands, to shoppings, to consuming, and so on. It's like, if there is a way to be happy, it's connected somehow to shopping malls, buying new things, spending money on stuff. It's all about this deity of consumption and economical growth that we worship since we are babies. Disconnecting from that slavery is a very important step into freedom, true freedom. Yom Kippur is the time. No screens, no phones, no electricity, nothing of that sort. We're just connecting to the original life force pool, that we immerse in that pool, we soften up ourselves in that pool, we cleanse ourselves in that pool, till we come out of Yom Kippur in a way that we are lighter, more connected, less addicted to this deity that is called the world of consumption. Shop till you drop. Also, we repeat 26 times on Yom Kippur the 13 attributes. And the 13 attributes again connect us even higher than Chochmah. So it's cleansing the body and soul. It's drawing bliss from the Mazalah, the upper source of light. And what does it mean? What does it mean to be free? When you realize that more than you want to be happy, the Creator is trying to make you happy. However, without your consent, He cannot make you happy, because there's no coercion in spirituality. So you need to let go of your addictions in order to be able to connect to the real intention of the Creator, that to realize that I'm here in this universe only for one purpose, so the Creator can feed me and nourish me with endless bliss and joy. That is the concept that is called Mazalah. Mazalah is also like translation. There's a terrible translation. Means good luck, good fortune. Mazalah is coming from the word mazal, which means the flow. When we connect to the true source of flow, which is the will of God, that we will all be fulfilled with His emanating light. When we connect to that and we remember that in any moment of stress or when we fall into one of our addictions, you know, anger, stress is also an addiction. When we connect to the 13 attributes, then it's sweetening our judgments. And it's like a mikveh. The last word of the 13 attributes is venake, the same numerical value as mikveh. Mikveh is the immersion ritual bath that when we immerse in holy water, like a spring, like a reservoir of rainwater, like an ocean, we cleanse not just the body, but also the soul. Because that's a way to connect to Bina. On Yom Kippur, the whole day is a big mikveh, big pool. We don't need the physical water. We are connecting to the original source of that energy. So, the fasting, we have one more issue. It says in the Talmud Bavli, Babylonian Talmud, tractate Yoma. Yoma means the day of Yom Kippur. Page 81b. Shabbat Shabbaton ulachem v'initem nafshotechem b'tish'a lachodesh ba'erev, me'erev ad erev tishbetu Shabbatchem. It says, you fast from the 9th of the month till the 10th. But look, Shabbat is from Friday night and Saturday. But it says in the Torah, only Shabbat. Why? From sunset to when the stars come out. So that's one day. That's Shabbat. You don't say it's Friday and Saturday. Okay, so why does it say from the 9th to the 10th? It's only the 9th, the 10th. Because Yom Kippur really starts sundown of the 9th, but then it becomes the 10th. So why say the 9th? V'chi b'tish'a mitanin, do we fast on the 9th of Tishrei? V'alo baso mitanin, we fast on the 10th. And the 10th starts at sundown. Ela lomar lecha, but it is to tell you, kol ha'ochel v'shote b'tshi, ma'aleh alav ha'katuv kilu it'anat tshi'i v'asiri. If you eat and drink plenty on the eve of Yom Kippur, which is the 9th of Tishrei, and then you fast on the 10th, it's like you fasted 2 days. Why is it like this? So if you realize every great holiday, Jewish holiday, there's food. And the food is just the dinner, which is called in Hebrew Seuda, which really means support. Okay, support. Well, how do we support? The light that is coming in, the holiness is coming in any Jewish holiday, you need to create, remember the food is a vessel to bring in the nourishment, the spiritual holy. So when we make the blessing over the bread and the wine, and then we eat the rest of the meal, it's called Seuda because it nourishes our souls. So you need the physical food to support the bringing in of the spiritual light down to earth. Now, on Yom Kippur, we do not have a physical meal, but we live in a physical body, with a physical world. We need that support. So you eat on the 9th of Tishrei twice as much with the intention to build the vessel to receive that spiritual light we receive on the 10th. To the food that we ate on the 9th. That's why it says you should eat double, should have at least 2 meals on the 9th, the eve of Yom Kippur, and finish them before sunset on the eve of Yom Kippur, the 9th, and then the holiday comes, you are ready. You build a vessel. There's another thing on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, one of the major actions on Yom Kippur was the scapegoat, which is a very weird story because it's dealing with something that we are really, really busy with today. It's about global warming. It's environmental pollution. It's global violence, epidemics, and plagues. All of that, the Zohar is saying, because of accumulation of negative human activity. So if you think that just by eliminating CO2 emissions, you're going to solve the world problem, no. We all know that this, all of the global pollution is a result of greed, and hunger for power. And also, even the global warming religion, it's all about hunger for power, to control more and more sources of power around the world. How do you cleanse that? So during the Yom Kippur, if you read the biblical Yom Kippur, it says that during the temple time, which means starting from Moses, the tabernacle in the desert, then there was the temple in Shiloh for almost 400 years, then more than 400 years in the in Jerusalem, first temple, more than 400 years in the second temple. The main thing on Yom Kippur, one of the main things, was that the high priest will have two goats. One goat, he put his hands on that goat, and he funneled through that goat all the human pollution of that year into to get that miserable goat. Why? In Hebrew, goat is ez, which means power, and really, Kabbalistically, it's harsh judgment. To show that a goat can be a conduit for harsh judgment. Okay? The Kohen, the high priest, will funnel all the negativity that was accumulated on the globe for 1 year by human action, and funnel it through the goat, and the goat will be taken to a place far away from Jerusalem, you know, but it took a while, few hours to walk over there. And then a man that was called E.T., weird, but that was his name, E.T., that how called it, special man, very weird looking person, big protruding eyes, like very weird looking, okay? And he would take the goat and throw the goat from a mount that is called Azazel. Again, okay, the place of harsh judgment, east of Jerusalem, in the Judean desert. The goat was a way to basically drain the negativity that was accumulated, and because of that, it's like the whole earth had a time to rejuvenate. The fact that the world is really accumulating so much pollution, and it affects us so terribly, is because we're not draining that. But still, what do? When the temple is not there, most of the temple work was replaced by other works. How can we achieve the same goals in our time? So that's why we read the story of the scapegoat. That's why it's called scapegoat. You know, the concept scapegoat in English means someone that takes all the negativity. That's exactly what the scapegoat is about. In Hebrew, ha-sa'ir la'azazel. Okay? So, the Torah reading of Yom Kippur is the Torah reading from Parashat Acharei Mot that is speaking about the temple work on Yom Kippur, and by reading the Torah, we are basically doing what it says, "Uneshalma farim sfateinu." By reading the Torah, we imitate, and we need to concentrate and meditate that when we're reading the Torah about the scapegoat, we are cleansing the whole planet. We have a repetition of the same thing, but in more detail, in the Musaf prayer, in that part it is called Seder HaAvodah, when we repeat from the Mishnah exactly the whole order of the temple work on Yom Kippur, which means we are repeating by our words, by it's like we are activating the temple work in order to cleanse ourselves and the whole world. Another aspect, Rabbi Isaac Luria is teaching us, that's kaparot. And what is kaparot? So Rabbi Isaac Luria is teaching us that to cleanse the judgments of the 10th day of Tishrei, which is the harshest judgments, when we had the physical temple, we could use a scapegoat in order to drain the negativity away from the globe, planet Earth. All negativity that was accumulated. However, we don't have the physical temple. So the Geonim brought up an idea, which means we are talking about more than 1,000 years ago. The great sages of that generation, they revealed us a secret. We cannot cleanse the negativity of the whole planet on Yom Kippur with a physical goat, but we can cleanse the negativity of our own bodies on the 9th day. But because the scapegoat connects to Malchut, the 10th day, on the 9th day, you can use a chicken. Because a chicken has, the same way as a goat, connected to the judgments of Malchut, the chicken is connected to the judgment of the 9th Sefirah, which is Yesod. How do you do that? By making a shechita, slaughtering, kosher slaughtering of a chicken, when on the 9th day, just before dawn, which is the time that the judgments are being sweetened. And that custom is called kaparot. Now, you slaughter a chicken, male chicken, a rooster for males, female chicken, a hen for females, and if it's a pregnant woman, you slaughter 3, one for the mother, one male for this child, and female for the child, because we don't know exactly what will be the child. So 3 for a pregnant woman, and all males of the family, one rooster for each, one female for each. Now, when it used to be, in all the time, just 50 years ago, 40 years ago, very few people did that. Because every little village, every community had its own shochet, their own few people who knew how to do the slaughtering properly. So you came to them early morning, before dawn, on Yom Kippur, the morning before Yom Kippur, and you did the kaparot. Doesn't matter, it was in Europe, it was the Middle East, North Africa. People did it. Today, thank God, communities are huge relatively to what used to be in the ancient times. People live in big, big communities in the cities. It's so unpractical, you cannot, I remember, when I was young, that was very easy. Later on, it became impossible. If so many people would do kaparot and everybody wants to do it just before dawn, that will create that it's becoming impractical. So what happened in the last decade, especially if, the Ministry of Agriculture in Israel is totally against it because it creates so much havoc. It's so impractical. And then the shochatim will be so much stressful. And he cannot concentrate because there's so many. So what came up is that usually some rabbis do the kaparot for the congregation. You simply give the name, you make a donation on the worth of a chicken on that time, and that money is being donated, so you can, and the chickens are also donated to poor people. So you basically did the kaparot by the rabbi takes your names, the names of the people, and meditates on, so he makes one chicken for all the females, one chicken for all the males, and by this we save a lot of we can find you can do it, but without killing everybody. Okay, so that's so whoever wants to that I will do kaparot for him or the family, simply in the bottom of the of the YouTube link, in the bottom you'll see in the details, you'll see the link for kaparot explaining exactly how to do it, how to send a donation, what to say when you do it, and how and we'll do it for you. Okay. Now another thing that was is done on Yom Kippur five times, vidui. Vidui, dark ages consciousness, confession. That was a time. It's all about confession. It's all about shame. So you have to confess and feel bad about it, and that will hopefully get you closer to God. Now, feeling bad about anything is not going to get you closer to God. No way. By the law of affinity, similarities attract. The more guilt we are filled with, the more far away from God we are. So, but the Kabbalists do not say it's a confession because they say simply read the word vidui. Vidui in Hebrew means confirmation, not confession. Which means when we say the vidui, which means we say the words, yes, we messed up, and we use it by the Hebrew alphabetical order. All the sins we could have made. And we take our right fist and we hit on the heart. We're not hitting on the heart. Oh, we are blame, we're blame, we're blame. The right fist, the right hand is chesed, loving kindness. And what we do and where we are collecting the judgments usually in the heart. We take it to the heart. So we take the loving kindness, five fingers of the right hand, and we wipe those judgments by saying, oh, we sinned. We did this, we did this, we did this. But we don't hit on the heart. We are cleansing. We are making sure that all we did belongs to the past. We are confirming that we are not, we say it in past tense, not in present tense. We say we were guilty, not we are guilty. We sinned, not we are sinful. Every time we hit on the heart is to cleanse, to bring God's light and mercy to the heart, to cleanse and to heal all of those scars of our wrongdoings. And that's the confirmation. We confirm that that's not us anymore. We are praying right now to be free of all of that and to stay away from that. And then we're coming to the most famous prayer on Yom Kippur, which is not really a prayer. It's called Kol Nidrei. Kol Nidrei is not one of the five prayers. It is being It's opening the Yom Kippur services. It is being said just at sundown or a little bit later in the entrance of Yom Kippur. It is not one of the five prayers. Not at all. This is more like a court appearing. Okay, what does it mean? Kol Nidrei. The common traditional knowledge is that we annul the vows. Okay, on superficial level, we know that one of the big shame we have, we promised people all kinds of stuff. And let's say we made a vow. We made a vow, I'm going to donate so much money to the synagogue or to who knows what kind of a non-profit organization. And I forgot, didn't have the money, I don't have the time, I don't feel like I made a promise. And promises you have to fulfill because promises create angels. And you have to let them be fulfilled. Okay? So the big belief is that you do you annul the vows with Kol Nidrei. The problem is that in all Jewish congregations, you do a real annulling of the vows in the morning before Rosh Hashanah, and then you do another time in most congregations, also in the morning before Yom Kippur, just to be sure about it. Okay? So if you did twice already, The annulling of the vows. You know, some of the vows I don't even remember that I made. I promised somebody. And by the way, we have a lot of guilt. You know, I promised my child that I'll come to the to his final to this whatever show he appears, and I couldn't come. I feel guilty about it. That's another scar that I'm carrying with me. So that will be great. Yes, but for that you have the annulling of the vows that is being done in the morning before Rosh Hashanah and before before Yom Kippur. So what is that about? And the Zohar has an amazing explanation. Something much bigger than that. We are reading from the Zohar Parashat Pinchas, Perusha Sulam, verse 808. And it says as follows. Deyomin deit bahon melechet chol inun misitra detzadat overa. It explains about Yom Kippur. It says, during the days of the week, all year long, except from holidays and Shabbat, those days are days that were created, as the Torah is saying, Genesis chapter 2, chapter 1, Asher b'ra Elohim la'asot, they were created for us to create, to do, to act, to be creative. And that's Melechet Chol. And you know what does it mean? In every work that we have, there is a good and evil. We have to separate. It's all about fixing stuff, so you're dealing with dirt. You know, we're dealing with dirt. It doesn't matter what you're doing, but let's say you're a carpenter. So there's a lot of dirt being generated. You're doing in law. There's a lot of dirt being generated when you do law. You can't help it. And you have to put things together and finally clean it up. So that's the weekly work. And that is because the weekly work is correcting the sin of the tree of knowledge, which is good and evil. And we have to separate the evil from the good. And in these days, and the Zohar is giving here a very powerful image, it's like Moses' staff that was turning from a staff. What's a staff? It's a magical wand. You can create magic. You control the world. You can do things, amazing things with a staff. But on the other hand, that staff can turn into a serpent, a snake, which is all what is terrible, the snake of the sin. You know, you go to work, and it can be amazing creation. You feel you're doing magic. You're coming home so fulfilled. Or you can be hit by that snake. You know, all the addictions, pride, ego, money, power, all of that can really arouse the snake. You know what work is about. It's not always magical wands. It many times is the snake of the sin. Every person has the duty daily to work on turning the snake into a serpent. However, on Yom Kippur, this is a different day. This day is called the Itkarei Kodesh. This day is called holiness. On this day of Yom Kippur, Shaltai Lana Dechaye, it's only the tree of life. When we are focusing on Yom Kippur, we don't work, no screens, no electricity, no food, no. We just focus on the spiritual aspect of the Yom Kippur work. We are connected to the tree of life. No tree of knowledge, good and evil. There's no Satan on Yom Kippur. The moment we're in the Yom Kippur frame, Satan cannot hurt us. Cannot touch us. When we talk about the Satan, the power of darkness and misery and negativity in the world, in Hebrew it's 364, which means not 365 days, 364. He has rulership over 364 sun days, solar days. One day, Yom Kippur, he cannot control. It belongs only to the tree of life. And therefore, on that day, ומסתרי לא יגורך רע. Therefore, you can't, there's nothing to be afraid of on Yom Kippur. Remember we said it was the happiest day of the year. Why? You know there's no Satan, there's no snake, it's only the Tree of Life day. You won't be happy? If you're not happy, there's something wrong with you. Uveginda, Bein Naichin Avadin. Therefore, on that day, the slaves, us, we are all enslaved to our ego, our fears, anxieties, our addictions, so on. On that day, we rest. We're in the Tree of Life. Uvei nafka nechirut. On that day, we're going out to freedom. Bein nafke mishal shalom. On that day, we're going out of our chains. This is how powerful Yom Kippur is. And therefore, on that day, the Zohar continues, Inun deit alayu gzardin benedeu vishwa. Kol nidrei is a text that the whole congregation is saying together with the leader three times. This is not a prayer that's annulling vows. But why we say together? Why do we have to take all the Torahs out of the ark and get them around the synagogue, and when the Torah is standing next to the leader of the prayer, then everybody repeats after the leader the words of the annulification of the vows? Because it says as follows, Inun deit alayu, Inun deit alayu gzardin beneder uvshivua, uvegin da takinu lemimar bekol nidrei vesrei. There are those people that there is a judgment hanging over them. And why it's a vow? Because remember, when the world was created, and we were created in His image, but we couldn't take the free gift of the light of God. We couldn't take it. So we made a vow. And the vow was, we don't want free gifts. We want to go to a world of testing, the world of darkness, Malchut. So when we connect to the light of God, we made it. And when we hurt, we want to pay for it. We don't want free gifts. And that vow is hanging over us. So all the misdoings, all the negative dark angels we generated and created along the years, past life, past years, last year, and now because of the karmic laws of the universe we created, now those judgments are going to hit us in the coming year as a law of cause and effect. We are now annulling that vow. We are right now canceling those vows flying in the air on the way to us, like a missile flying, a ballistic missile flying towards our direction. So basically, Kol Nidrei is the Iron Dome. We fly up to the air. How do we do that? We take the Torahs, and the Zohar says the Torahs are connecting to Zeranpin, to the air, element of air. It's called Nedarim Pochim Ba'avir, vows flying in air. The Torah is connecting to us to Zeranpin. We take the Torahs out. The whole congregation is experiencing the Torah being led around them. And now we're standing with the Torahs on the Bima. And as a whole congregation, we say we are nullifying right now all vows. Nothing. They're all annulled, don't exist. And they're not going to come at us anymore. And that's how powerful Kol Nidrei is about. When it says, but that means that the congregation must be united. Because when we're united, we become a righteous person because we complete each other. Each one is by himself, there's a little problem because no one is perfect. We know no one is perfect. Only when we're united, we are like a perfect righteous man. And then we continue. So all of these, that by the way, this Zohar is the most ancient source for the tradition of Kol Nidrei. All of them, Kulhun Yon Shvitin Ufikin, this is the words of Kol Nidrei. All the vows, all the Esarei, that means all the what we forbid ourselves, all of them, Kulhun Yon Shvitin Ufikin, all are going to be annulled. L'Asherim V'L'Akamim, they don't exist. They never existed. Oveginta, and because of that neder, the Hashem, the Yutif Eret, Ushwa, the Elohim, Malchut, Vabdu, Al Galuta, Leron, Bechokma, Vina, Yon Shvitin, Ushvikin, Slosiran, Vekayamin. So we have the power to annul all of these judgments coming our way for the coming year. Venislach Lechol Adat Bnei Israel. And it will be forgiven to the whole congregation of the children of Israel. That's why it says Chesed is water. Chesed Yumaim, Gvura, Esh. Judgment is fire, Tiferet Avir. And Tiferet is fire, is air. Uvegin Dao Kmua. Marei Matnitin, that's why we say Heter Nedarim Pochim Ba'avir. This is a nullification of the vows flying up in the air. What's the air? Remember when we said that the pipes, what are the pipes? Zeran Pin. This is the element of air, which means all of those blockages that are supposed to block our life force during the year, we come up and we simply annul them. They don't exist. They cannot block the flow of light anymore. So basically, this is what Yom Kippur is about in a nutshell. Shana Tova, Gmar Chatima Tova, all the best, unless there are some questions. Okay, so no questions. We can say again, Shana Tova, Gmar Chatima Tova.